First, I want to thank all the organizers for organizing this workshop and for inviting me. It's been a great experience so far. So what I'm going to talk about today is some of our recent work on analyzing the behavior of Gaussian-weighted graph Laplacing on what we call singular manifolds. I'm going to define this very soon as the first step towards understanding more complex data. Okay, so this is joint work with my colleague Michael Belkin and students Qitao Chie and Xue Yuan Zhou. Okay, so understanding data and spaces where data is sampled from is a very important problem, ubiquitous in a lot of application fields. And in particular, this is a central theme behind, say, the machine learning, the field of machine learning. Okay. Now, given that the data often come to us embedded in high-dimensional space, in order for us to be able to efficiently process it, we often want to make some, hopefully, reasonable assumptions about data, so that we can both process it efficiently and hopefully with guarantees. Okay? And one very common such assumption is that even though the data may reside in high-dimensional ambient space, its intrinsic dimension is low. Okay? Another one which is most restrictive but still popular one is that actually the space, the hidden domain where data are sampled from, it's a smooth manifold embedded in some Euclidean space. Okay? So the so-called manifold assumption is indeed behind many algorithms in the learning community and also in the behind surface and manifold reconstruction or topology estimation from the field of computational geometry and computational topology. Okay. So this manifold assumption provides kind of a first realistic model for nonlinear data because it captures many important nice geometry property of the reflecting many nice geometric property of the data. And also this manifold structure gives us nice properties that algorithms can leverage in order to, say, provide certain guarantees. Okay? But at the same time, there are also many aspects about realistic data that this manifold assumption do not really reflect. Okay? And our goal is to kind of relax this manifold assumption so that it can model more complex data. Okay? In particular, in this talk, what we're going to consider is that on top of the manifold, we're going to allow the following three types of singularities. Manifolds can have boundaries, or different manifolds can intersect, or we also have this so-called edge type, which is kind of a non-smooth fold in the manifold. Or another way to think of this is that you have different pieces of smooth manifold, they are gluing together on the common boundary that they share. So across this boundary, you have a non-smooth transition here. This is the fold. We call it edge type singularity. Okay? So all these three different types of singularity actually happen quite naturally in realistic data. For example, the boundary happens when the spatial parameters have some natural constraints. Like if you have a robot arm, because of the self-collision constraint and also because the range of the parameter of the joint, there's a limit on that. There's a forbidden region in the configuration space that you cannot move into. That naturally traces out a boundary. Okay? Or for intersection type, if you have two classes of data that contain similar instances, then the similar instances kind of lie at the intersection of the two manifolds modeling those two classes of data. Like in this case, we have two handwritten digits, 7 and 1, they look very similar. So basically, this lies on the intersection of the manifold modeling digit 7 and modeling digit 1. Okay. And this edge type of singularity, this non-smooth fold, this happens naturally, say, in the process of generating data, you have some phase transition, which induce a non-smooth transition in the parameter space. Okay. So what I'm trying to say here is that although the three types of singularity, they do not yet give us full power to model arbitrary complex data, but these are all very common in realistic data. They're important scenario that we should be able to handle, we should consider. Okay? And our goal is to study how the presence of such singularities affect, influence data analysis algorithms and how we can effectively learn such singularities. Okay? In particular, in this talk, as a first step towards this goal, I'm going to talk about some of the recent results of studying such what I call singular manifold, which is just a collection of manifolds with such singularities. Okay, so study such singular manifolds through the lens of the Gaussian weight of the graph Laplacian. So why the Gaussian weight of the graph Laplacian? Recent years, Laplacian-based measures has been widely used for many algorithms for discovering geometry in data. Okay, and also there has actually been a fairly good theoretical understanding of the properties of Laplacian when data is sampled from a smooth manifold. Okay, and this theoretical understanding indeed help us to design better algorithms for learning, for example. Okay, so now we would like to understand the behavior of this graph Laplacian for data sampled from this slightly more general scenario, the singular manifolds. And we believe that with the better understanding of such a behavior, this can also help us in designing better algorithms and understand the behavioral algorithms as well. Okay? So that's what we are going to do. Now, before I describe our work, I want to mention some of the related work in this direction, more general domains. So in the literature of surface and manifold reconstruction, although very often we assume that the data sampled from a nice smooth embedded manifold, but there also been some very nice work on sampling theory for more general compact domains, both for reconstruction and for estimating topology. In the field of learning, there has been some work on learning a collection of linear subspaces, which can be considered as a special case of the singular manifold, because where each manifold is a linear subspace. So those linear subspaces can intersect, and so on. And very recently, there also have been very interesting work on learning the more general stratified space. And yesterday, we heard one talk by Bei Wang on this topic. This is more general than the singular manifold, because it's defined at a topology level. Okay, so what I'm going to do in the remaining time is that I would first briefly introduce the graph, the Gaussian weight of the graph Laplacian, and its continuous version, the so-called functional Laplacian. And then I would actually focus on this functional Laplacian, describe the behavior of this functional Laplacian around singularities. And then I would also like to provide some discussion of the implication of such results and potential applications. Okay? All right. So first, the graph Laplacian. Now suppose we're given some discrete data, in this case, just some points, sampled from a hidden domain and a hidden smooth manifold, in this case, just this ellipse here. Okay? In order for us to retrieve information about this hidden domain, a most natural thing to do, or perhaps even the only thing to do, is that first, we want to construct some discrete, build some discrete structure from these discrete samples. And then hopefully, properties of this discrete structure will reflect properties of the hidden domain. Okay? And the simplest discrete structure we can think of is this proximity graph, where every point is just connected either to its k nearest neighbors or to other points within, say, epsilon distance to this point. Okay? So it's a very simple discrete structure. But of course, now the key is that what property can you extract from this proximity graph that would reflect that of the hidden manifold? Okay? And it turned out that the Gaussian weight of the graph Laplacian is one such object which has been shown to connect to something reflecting the manifold structure. Okay? Which I would make it more precise very soon. So what is the Gaussian weight of the graph Laplacian? If we have n data points, p1 to pn. The graph Laplacian is a matrix of size m by n, with using a parameter t over there, which I show over there, which is the ijth entry simply defined as the weight, the Gaussian weighted distance between pi. Just look at the first formula. This is the ijth entry is simply the Gaussian weighted distance between pi and tj with proper weight. Okay, and this parameter t roughly specifies the width of this Gaussian kernel. Okay? So, and if we apply this Gaussian weight to the graph Laplacian to a function, which in the discrete case becomes an n-dimensional vector consisting of its function value at all these data points. Okay? Then what we have is the following formula. So the formula looks long, but this is nothing but a weighted version of the more familiar, perhaps, combinatorial graph Laplacing. It's just a Gaussian weighted version of that. Okay, so in Monday's talk, Kale mentioned the combinatorial graph Laplacing. So what I want to point out here is that this graph Laplacing is a very light it's a very lightweight structure because all it requires is just a proximity graph. You don't need to have a simplicity building higher dimensional objects here, okay? Which make it very appealing for analyzing high dimensional data. At the same time, it has been shown that this Gaussian weighted graph Laplacing is connected to the manifold Laplacing one point are sampled from a manifold M. So what is the manifold Laplacing? If we have a manifold M, the so-called Laplacing Beltrami operator delta, it operates on functions, given a function f defined on the manifold, delta f is defined as the divergence of the gradient of f. Okay, so if the domain is simply the Euclidean space, then delta f has the more familiar form of the sum of the unmixed second order partial derivatives. Okay, so the Laplace-Beltrami operator is a very fundamental mathematical object, but it also has many nice properties that that can be used in practical applications. And in particular, two manifolds, M and N, they are isometric, if and only if they share the same eigenvalue and eigenfunction, okay? I'm being a bit sloppy here, of course, by sharing the same eigenfunction, I mean, under some map, their eigenfunction are the same, okay? So, like I mentioned, it has many nice properties which I'm not going to go over, and it has been widely used both in high-dimensional data analysis applications such as in clustering and semi-supervised learning, and in analyzing low-dimensional structure like in computer graphics, such as in mesh smoothing and optimization. Okay, so basically, this is an object which is not only of mathematical interest but also have many practical implications. Applications. Okay? At the same time, the Gaussian weighted graph Laplacing that I mentioned earlier, it turned out that it converges to the manifold Laplacing when points are uniformly randomly sampled from the manifold M. And this convergence is both point-wise and in spectrum. This is shown by Belkin and Nayogi. So, the connection actually between this graph Laplacing and the manifold Laplacing is actually made through something called the functional Laplacing in the paper by Belkin and Nayogi, which has the following form, which is nothing but a continuous version of the graph Laplacing. You can think of that I replace this big summation here by an integral. Okay? So this formula itself actually has a very nice interpretation coming from the relation between the Laplace operator and the so-called heat operator, okay? But that's not essential in this talk, which we're going to just focus on the form of this formula later. Okay, so this is, so from now on, what I'm going to do is that I will only talk about this functional Laplacing because this continuous version is much cleaner to describe, okay? Going through this continuous version to its discretization is kind of more standard, okay? Not very exciting there. All right, so let's see the behavior of the functional Laplacing on singular around singularities. So just to remind you, a singular manifold is just defined as a collection of manifolds that can have all the three types of singularity that I mentioned, I introduced earlier, okay? And our goal is that given a function f, we analyze the behavior of LT, which is the functional Laplacing, applied to f at the point x, where x is either on or around singularities. Okay, so that's our goal. Now it turned out that the functional Laplacing behaves significantly differently at singularity, at and around singularity points compared to at non-singular points, which are called irregular points. Okay, so to see the difference, let me actually first tell you how does the functional Laplacing behave around a regular non-singular point. Okay, so remember that functional Laplace applied to f at x is defined by this integral formula. It's just the kind of convolution with the Gaussian kernel here. Okay. So if we use the Taylor expansion, we can approximate the function f of y equal to f of x plus a linear order term. Here, this is the gradient of f and a quadratic order term where h is the Hessian at of the function at x. Okay? And let me simplify the notation a little bit. Also use this kernel k of t x y to denote this Gaussian term here with proper weighting. Okay? With this now, our function on Laplace becomes, if you replace plug in f of y by its Taylor expansion, okay, then you see that fx and the minus fx got cancelled out. What remains is that we're now doing integral over the linear order term here and the quadratic order term here. Okay? Now what's happening with this linear order term? So let me actually just write it out separately so it looks. So we have one of the integral is this in the product between y minus x and the gradient dy. So what happens is that this kernel, Gaussian kernel, is symmetric, okay? And then this is an odd function in the direction of x. So as you vary y around x, this term will cancel each other out, okay, because it's an odd function. So in the end, what you get is that this term gives you roughly zero, okay, because it cancels out. So I should say that I'm simplifying a lot of things here. For example, it's not really doing the integral on the manifold, it's actually in the tangent space of the at x of the manifold. But to keep the notation simple, let me just be a bit sloppy here. The best thing is that you can think of, for intuition, think of this manifold just as a linear subspace for the time being. Okay, that's the best thing to do. So the first term cancel out. Then what remains is only the integral of this second order, this quadratic order term. Okay, and this turned out to be a constant times the trace of the Hessian matrix, which is nothing but the Laplace of the function f at x. Okay, so the most important thing is this formula here. At a regular point, a non-singular point x, the function of Laplace applied to f at x, roughly speaking, equal to a constant times the manifold Laplace at this point. Okay, so that's the key formula here. Okay? And let's now see what happens at a non-regular singular point. First, consider a boundary point. Okay? So we have a point x on the boundary of a manifold. And from what I showed you previously, I know that the function Laplace applied to f at x equal to this two integral over the linear order term and the integral over this quadratic order term. Okay? This integral over the quadratic order term, just like what I said before, still equal to some constant times the Laplace, manifold Laplace, which is of order 1. Okay? But now, this linear term can no longer be cancelled out. Okay, so let's see what happens here. So let's just focus on this first integral of this linear order term here. So again, I draw the picture as the manifold is a linear subspace. In this case, just a plane. Okay, so first, at the boundary point x, let me use n to denote the outward normal of the boundary at this point. Okay, in other words, this is direction in the tangent space of lie in the tangent space of x and normal to the boundary at this point. Okay? So we want to integrate the inner product of this vector with the gradient of the function at this point. Okay? And if you look at this vector, it has two components. One in the direction u1, in the direction orthogonal to the outward normal direction n, the other one along the normal direction. Okay? Now, as you vary y, integrate the over around the x. Since now we're integrating around in the half space, okay, only this component u1 that's orthogonal to the direction n got cancelled out. Okay? So when you look at the vector here and the vector here, their u1 components will cancel out. What remains is this component along the normal direction n. Okay? In other words, in the end, you don't need to worry about everything remains. It's only the inner product between the normal direction, outward normal direction n, and the gradient of the function at this point. And what is that? That's nothing but the partial derivative of the function f along direction n. Okay? And for those of you who are curious, how come now I get the term 1 over square root t here? What happens is that if you look at the Gaussian kernel, so you have e to the minus x minus y square over 4t, and your integral is something over this and other things, okay? So we have to, in order to do, perform this integration, we have to perform a change of variables to cancel out this 4t. So the right way to think is that every x minus y minus x term will cancel one square root of t term, okay? And in here, we have only one y minus x term, so that can only cancel out square root of t, okay? That's why the quadratic term, when you integrate it, you cancel both 1 over t out, okay? So that's why you have this 1 over square root t left. So to put these things together, what I said, basically what we see is that now at a boundary point, you have the Laplace, the function of Laplace applied to f at a boundary point has the following formula. Now, compared to the case when you have when x is a regular point, what's the main difference? First, the dominating term here now is dominated by scaling factor, which is 1 over square root t, while previously at a regular point, the dominating term is only of order 1, constant. Okay, and when t is very small, this 1 over square t is very large, so it behaves significantly different from a constant factor here. Okay, and also second, for a regular point, the dominated term actually depends on a second order derivative of the function, while here, at the singularity point, at the boundary point, the dominating term depends on a first order derivative, which is this partial derivative along direction n. Okay, so that's the main difference between these two. And you may say that, okay, this is just a 4-point at the singularity. But turn out that this boundary effect, this boundary singularity effect, also influence points around the boundary, not just at the boundary. Okay, so for a point x near the boundary, let x0 be its nearest neighbor along the boundary, and assume that distance between them is r times square root t. This is just to simplify the notation later. And it turned out that the Laplace, functional Laplace Lt of f at x equal to this form compared to the previous one. The only thing different is now I'll have another scaling factor, e to the minus r square. So as x moves towards x0, in the end, when x also falls on the boundary, r becomes 0. So e to the 0 gives you 1, so you get the previous formula back, okay? And as x moves away from the boundary, basically this the boundary effect, the influence of this first term, have exponential decay, because as r becomes large, very soon this effect disappears, okay? So this boundary effect decreases quickly, however, for points roughly within a band of width square root t around the boundary, this effect is still dominating, okay? So even though that this effect, this boundary effect decreases quickly as you move away from the boundary, but you would see significant boundary effect within a band of width square root t around the boundary, okay? We'll see later what this could mean. Okay, so now this is for a singularity point at the boundary. And now if you look at the singularity point at intersection, in this case, I have two manifolds, x is at its intersection. I should say that in the illustration, I'm using this really simple case where the two manifolds are all one manifold. But in general, they are D manifolds, and their intersection doesn't have to be of codimension 1. Okay? So now if you just look at this singular point itself, you write out the Laplace, functional Laplace formula. It should be the integral over the domain, omega 1 unit omega 2. And you separate them, you get this two. What are this? This is nothing, the first term is nothing but the functional Laplacing restricted to omega 1 at this point. And the second one is nothing but the functional Laplacian of the function restricted to domain omega 2 at this point. Okay? So at this point itself, actually, the functional Laplace still reflects the manifold Laplacian. It's addition of this 2. Okay? So from that point of view, it looks like that at intersection singularity, the points are oblivious of whether they're really on the singularity or not. Okay? However, if you just move a little bit away from this singularity, then things become very different. So if you are given a point x close to the intersection singularity, then the Laplace behaves dominated by this formula. So it's a messy formula, but don't be afraid. Here we have, let me just point out the key points here. First, the first thing to notice is that still the dominating term has a scaling factor, which is 1 over square root t. Okay? Second, now it's still dominated by first order partial derivatives. But now since you are on, now it's dominated not only by influenced by some partial derivative of omega on omega 1, it's also by something on omega 2. Okay, because at this point it can see also the other manifold. Okay? And three, there's also this other scaling factor depends on how close this point x is to the singularity. Okay, and more importantly, as this point moves away, that would make the effect of this term disappear. But for x roughly within r times square root t away from the singularity, this effect is still there. Okay, so it's actually very similar to the previous case, other than that all these little tiny details are different. Okay, so this is a singular intersection singularity. Finally, what happens around this edge type of singularity, this folding. So let's say that now I have two manifold, omega 1, omega 2, two sheets glued along a common boundary here. I call it edge. And the point x is on this edge singularity. Okay? At this point itself, if you look at its functional Laplacian, it's nothing but the boundary effect of x because it's on the boundary of omega 1, and the boundary effect coming from omega 2. So N1 and N2 are the outward boundary normal at x to omega 1 and to omega 2. Okay? So this is nothing but the addition of these two boundary effects that we've seen before. Okay? Because it's on the boundary of both manifolds now. Okay? But if you move a little bit away from this edge singularity, things become more complicated because now it's roughly what happens is that this point x can both see the boundary, so it has the boundary effect coming from because you see the boundary of omega 1. Also, it has something like an intersection type of effect because it can see the other manifold omega 2. Okay, so I skip all the details here, but this is what you get. And if you look at the general form, it's still very similar. Even though the details are different, but the general form is still very similar. It depends on partial derivatives and dominating factors 1 over square root t. Okay? So these are basically what happens with the functional Laplacian when you are on or around the singularities. Okay? So now I'm going to discuss some implication of this behavior that I just introduced. And in case you get lost by my very long sequence of equations, here's your second chance. Okay, and last chance, too. Okay. So the first key point I want to talk about is that, now, I showed this formula earlier. This is how the functional graph Laplacian behave around different type of singularity points. Ignore their precise forms. What we see is that at all the singular point, it's the dominating term has a different scaling factor, which is 1 over square root t, versus at a non-singular point I said earlier, what we have is that the functional Laplace is same as is the same as manifold Laplace, so it's order 1 term. Okay? So when t goes to tends to 0, this will become bigger and bigger, so which is significantly different from an interior point. Okay? So what this suggests is that perhaps we can use this fact to identify the singularity by just finding all the points with very high LT of f values, because those are potentially points at the singularity. Okay? And furthermore, you could say that, oh, but you may choose the wrong function, that some function also give you a high value at a certain non-singular point. Then what you can do is that you can also vary your t. When you vary your t, presumably, because the at an interior point, you are similar to the manifold Laplacian, so your function value should not change. But when you vary t at a singular point, because of the 1 over square root of t value, this one becomes even bigger. Okay, so you can use that to help you to further identify the singular point. Okay, so here are some experimental results, very preliminary. So here we have this this the digit image. So we take a collection of, say, all handwritten digits of 1. Okay, and then so each image, we consider that as a single point in the feature space. So this gives us a bunch of points in some high-dimensional space. Okay, I believe the digits, the image are 28 by 28. So this roughly gives us a point in the dimension, in 800 dimension. Okay, so now I construct the graph Laplacian from this point. Okay, and now I'm just applying this graph Laplacian to a very simple function f. For every image, every point, it's simply defined as the sum of the pixel intensities. Okay, so it's a very simple function. So I apply the graph Laplacian to it, and then I take the top 2% of the function value LT of f, because those are potentially the singular points. Okay, so you take all those images, you average them out, these are all the singular points, you see this is the average of them, and you take all the remaining images, you average them out, you see this is in some sense outlier, probably on the boundary, something different. Okay, it's quite different. Okay? And here just more examples of the same. And you can also do this to help our graphics applications. Say, I give you points sampled from some surface model. Okay, you don't have the surface mesh structure, only the point cloud sampled from the surface. And now we construct the graph Laplacian, and we apply it to now the coordinate function. What is the coordinate function? So every point, now you actually have 3 functions. The coordinate x, coordinate y, coordinate z. Okay, so I apply that to it, you get 3 functions back. So actually every point you would have a vector back. We take the magnitude of that vector, okay? And then here is just a color map of that vector. You see along all the sharp edges. What are these sharp edges? These are exactly the so-called edge type of singularity we're talking about, okay? So along all the sharp edges, you see functions. This value is much bigger than other points. Okay, and you take a threshold, and you identify all the sharp potential points on the feature curves. Okay, so here just some more example. I'm not showing the surface, but you can imagine these are all CAD models. And here is another thing of the same flavor. So this is surface, but I'm not using the mesh structure, only the points sampled from this. And you see that along the boundary, your function value is very high, the LT of F value is very high. And also here, because what happens actually, even though the mesh fielded here, there's no point inside. So these are also boundary, close to the nose, okay? So what we did is that after we identify this potential feature points, we just apply some algorithm we developed based on the RIP graph to extract a feature curve from this. So now you can just directly from point cloud data extract feature curves or boundary curves. Okay, you don't need the mesh structure. Okay, here are more examples of the feature curve. The yellow points are the potential feature points, and the dark curve is the feature curve we extracted using the RIP graph algorithm. Okay, even though I'm showing the surface here, you are not using the mesh structure. We simply take the points. Okay, second, we know that around the singularity, the functional Laplace have different scaling behavior. Okay, they all have this 1 over square root t scaling factor. But actually, if you look even further, at a finer level, the local structure around all these different singularities is actually very different. Okay, so these are the scaling factor. Around the boundary, so this is your manifold. This is your boundary. Okay, around the boundary, it's dominated by this function. So as you get close to the boundary, your LT of f value gets bigger and bigger. Your scaling factor is bigger and bigger. Okay, but around the intersection here, this intersection of this horizontal line and this vertical line, okay? And here I'm showing the scaling factor for points on the horizontal line, okay? Now, around the singularity, intersection singularity, as you get closer to it, first, actually your scaling factor goes negative very large. And then the goal comes back, becomes order one again, and then it goes up. Okay? So it's actually very different from this boundary. And the edge type of singularity is a combination of the previous two. It's much harder to analyze. Okay? But what this suggests is that perhaps based on this local behavior, we can use that to help, once we identify potential singular points, we can then distinguish what are the different type of singularities. Okay? So this is just to show that numerically we do see this different scaling pattern around an edge type of singularity, intersection type of singularity, and a boundary type of singularity. Okay? So here we have a bunny intersected with a plane, okay, only point clouds. And now we apply again to the coordinate function, just f equal to y. And as you can see that around this intersection type, your function values first go very low and then very large, which is different from earlier when you see this boundary just goes high. Okay, so the pattern is different. All right, another point I want to mention is that you may say that, okay, singularity points themselves, they are only, the region they are on is only of measure zero. Do we really need to care about them? Okay, and the short answer is no, at least not for the case where your singularity is of codimension one, because like I mentioned earlier, this singularity effect is actually within a band of width square root t around the singularity. Okay, although when t tends to zero, the width of this band becomes smaller and smaller. However, the amplitude of the singularity also goes bigger and bigger. So the total effect, when you sum it up in L1 sense, the total effect actually does not vanish. It's roughly, basically the amplitude goes up, the width becomes small, so the total effect is still of roughly constant order. So as 10 goes to zero, this effect does not vanish, and we cannot just simply ignore the singularities. They will have an influence, okay? And also, remember that if you look at the precise form of the formula I show you, around the boundary point, we have the plus LT of f has this form, okay? It depends on the partial derivative of function f in direction of the outward boundary normal direction n, okay? So this suggests that I can give, if you give me a function defined on some point clouds and you want to compute the partial derivative of this function along the outward normal at the boundary, you can use this one to estimate that, okay? In fact, you can also use this formula to compute this, to estimate the outward normal directly at the boundary, directly from point clouds. Again, no mesh structure. Okay? So here I'm showing an example where, again, I apply this to the coordinate function because it has a three, it's actually x, y, z, three coordinates. Then you get a vector back. If you look at this vector, at the interior, this picture is not a perfect picture. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get another one in time. So at the interior point, actually, this vector returned is along the surface normal direction because it's related to the mean curvature flow, okay? But as you move closer to the boundary, this vector changes direction, and along the boundary, it actually goes now in the outward normal direction now, okay? So you can use this to estimate the outward normal direction. It's actually reasonably robust to noise. All right, I also want to say a few words about the implication of this result towards the eigenfunctions of this graph Laplacian operator, okay? Because, I mean, in fact, in practice, most of the algorithms rely on the eigenstructure of this operator. So it's actually important to understand that. But at the same time, you'll see our understanding here is also a bit more preliminary. Consider again a boundary point, okay, because it's easiest, so it's easier to see what's happening. Let phi t be an eigenfunction of your graph Laplacian LT, okay? Now, what we said earlier is that at a boundary point, LT applied to phi t roughly equal to this term, okay? At the same time, because this is an eigenfunction, it also equals to lambda t, the corresponding eigenvalue, times phi t at this point, okay? Because this function is bounded, this value is also bounded, Okay, fine. Now imagine that we now start to decrease t. T tends to go to zero now. Okay, and as that happens, assume that there's a limit of this corresponding eigenfunction as well. What happens? In the limit, this quantity still should be bounded. Okay, because it's coming from eigenfunction. Okay, but this one will go to infinity. Okay, what does this mean? In order for that to happen, because it's two roughly equal to each other, this term has to go to zero. In other words, my eigenfunction, the partial derivative of the eigenfunction along the outward boundary normal direction goes to zero. This is exactly the Neumann boundary conditions. Okay, so what this suggests, this is not a claim, okay, I'm not claiming this because this is just the intuition. This suggests that in the limit, when we look at the graph Laplacian, actually it will automatically take the Neumann boundary conditions. Okay? So the initial numerical results seem to confirm this, and I'm not showing those results because it's very boring. You just see that it's Neumann boundary condition. Now, the cases about this edge type, this non-smooth folding, is actually more interesting. So by similar argument, what you eventually get is this formula. Let me just draw a very simple illustration here for the... So suppose I have one piece of manifold, call it omega 1, another piece, call it omega 2, and you have a point at this edge type of singularity, and let N1 be the outward boundary normal corresponding to the manifold piece omega 1, and N2 be the outward boundary normal for omega 2 at x. Okay? So then what happens is that it turns out that by similar argument from what I showed you previously for the boundary case, you get this formula. Now, what is this intuitively saying? This is saying that if you look at the eigenfunction phi t restricted to omega 1 and omega 2, because phi t only needs to be continuous along this one, it doesn't have to be smooth here, right? Because you have a nice smoothness here. But if you look at the partial derivative of this eigenfunction phi t restricted to omega 1 in the direction of n1, it's the same as the partial derivative of this eigenfunction restricted omega 2 in direction n2. Okay? So what this really saying is that even though that you have a non-smooth change in your manifold, you have a non-smooth fold, okay, the eigenfunction itself is C1 continuous across that fold. It doesn't see this fold because the partial derivative matches there. Okay, so this is actually quite interesting fact for us, and the conjecture is that actually our conjecture is that eigenvalues and eigenfunctions of two isometric singular manifolds, whether you have the fold or you don't have the fold, is actually they are the same. Okay, so this again is kind of verified by some very simple examples, but we don't have a proof for this yet. So like in this case, in one case you have just a rectangle, the other one you fold the rectangle. Okay, so you have a nice smoothness folding line over there. Okay, and you construct their graph Laplacian, corresponding graph Laplacian, and look at its eigenstructure. Okay, this is at the top 17 eigenfunctions. And up to the sign change, they are all the same. We also verified the eigenvalue for top 300 eigenvalues. They all match. Okay. So this is actually a very interesting, surprising fact for us because when you have this non-smooth fold, because the graph Laplacian is defined using distance coming from the end in the space. Okay. So along this fold, the geodesic distance and your Euclidean distance are very different. I mean, if you're on a smooth manifold, when you are very close, you have two points x, y very close to each other, then geodesic distance and Euclidean distance gradually converge. But it's not the case when you have a non-smooth fold. Yet it seems that it doesn't affect eigenfunction at all. Eigenfunction doesn't see this at all. Okay? Of course, we don't yet know whether this is true or not, but it appears, yes. Yes, we did. And so the student indeed, well, we didn't gradually change it. We tried to. This one and another one, which is the angle is much smaller. It's the same. Yeah, but we didn't do what you suggest. You gradually change to see what happens. Okay? And so this is one. Now here's another example where you have a non-flat space now, so on sphere. We have to use such an example because it's easier to construct this kind of fold while still make sure that it's isometric. Okay? So in this case, we have a sphere. We cut the top of the cap off, and then we flip it. We glue it back inward. Okay? So you have a non-smooth fold over there along this circle. Okay? And now it will be hard to show the eigenfunction because of the multiplicity in the eigenvalues. Okay? So instead, I'll just show you the relative error in the corresponding eigenvalues. Okay? So here, the x-coordinate is the index of eigenvalue. The y-coordinate is the relative error for the case eigenvalue computed from those two sphere and flipped sphere. Okay? Relative error is defined as such. It's not a great picture because it looks like the error is really large, but actually they never go more than 2%. Okay, so it's actually the error is very small here. All right, so basically what I talk about today is some of our initial study of the behavior of this Gaussian weighted graph Laplacian on what we call singular manifolds. Okay, now the reason that we focus on this Gaussian weighted graph Laplacian is that it's a useful object, capture a lot of geometry inside it, and also it's a very lightweight structure, only requires the proximity graph. Okay, so of course what we present is still just the first step. There are many interesting questions, open questions remains. For example, the behavior of its eigenfunction, as I commented earlier, this would be important for the practical implication because the eigenstructure is what the algorithm usually rely on. Okay, and we only have very preliminary understanding of that. For the intersection case, for example, it's much harder, it's much more complex, it's very hard to see what's happening with the eigenstructure. Okay, and it would be interesting to give it a more thorough study there. And also, what are the other potential applications? I mentioned briefly that we can combine this with our reef graph algorithm just to get some feature curve reconstruction for surface models from their point samples. Okay, and one can also imagine that using the identify singularity for some learning application like a denoising or a classification algorithm. So what else can one do with the understanding of the singularities now? And also another interesting question will be provide a different way to learn collection of linear subspaces. As I said earlier, it's kind of a special case, although so for linear subspaces, the good thing is that Laplace on a linear space has it's much simpler, have many special properties that one can leverage. Okay, although I do need to point out that I forgot to mention earlier, the way we define the singular manifold right now, all the manifold has to be of the same dimension right now. Okay, we don't have mixed dimension yet. The intersection can be co-dimensioned, not bigger than one, but the manifold themselves. So we don't yet handle a case where you have a plane with a line going through it yet. Okay, the reason is evident because this integral formula, if you have two things of a different measure, one of them disappear. Okay, but in practice, when you have points, is there something that one can do, or is it possible to peel it off gradually, first starting from highest dimension and gradually review finer and finer structure? Okay. Of course, I mean, another interesting question whether this can be used to learn the more general structure, the stratified space, for example. Okay, and with that, I conclude my talk. Thank you.